documenting the crisis of our republic, waging war on the new world order. This is Govern America. Govern America.
We're just south of the Great Lakes capital city, covering all of North America via satellite, micro FM stations all across the country, and streaming live from FEMA Region 5 and Michigan Planning Region 2. This is Govern America. I'm Darren Weeks. Vicki Davis is here. Nice to have you with us as we once again document the crisis of our republic, the undermining of our national, state, and individual autonomy. Today's the 22nd of July, 2017. And here we are again on another exciting and eventful, event-packed-filled broadcast of Govern America. It's been an event-filled week for me, I'll tell you what. My wife has been having some health problems, and as a result of that, she's not able to drive. And so I've been kind of running around all over the place. Now, what's ironic about that is my youngest daughter, Hannah, has had a, most of you know, if you've been listening any length of time, she developed epilepsy after a bump of her head on the ice when both of my daughters were figure skaters. In fact, they were, for a while, members of the United States Figure Skating Association, and they were teaching little kids how to skate. And kind of a little, you know, little something extra, you know, we try to do to try to help them get have something to work their way through college. And unfortunately, the fall caused, you know, shortly thereafter, she developed these seizures, and she they diagnosed it as epilepsy. So I've always equated the bump on the head with the epilepsy, with the seizure activity. Anyway, she's been cleared to drive now. I mean, she's made a lot of progress on that, and the medication that she is on appears to be stamping it down. And it's been one thing that's really been very kind of a nail-biter for me, because it's always a nail-biter when you have a new driver in the family, worrying about them. But then there's the added problem of the history there, so I've just it's personal fears that I have to overcome. But having stifled that or smashed that down, now we got the other situation which is completely unrelated. These are not seizure attacks that Michelle's going through. These are things that we thought were neurological in nature. Which dates back to even before we were married, which I think we've been married 22 years. I should probably make sure I get that down right for my own health. But anyway, that's something that after all these years has, you know, went away. And it was something that we realized that finally, after bouncing her around and running up, you know, thousands of dollars to doctor bills, and they never were able to find anything. They finally said we couldn't. At some point, they said maybe it's something beyond medical science, and so we ended up just realizing that doesn't go through a lot of stress, and goes through, you know, gets proper rest, she's able to recover. You know, I mean, or live a normal life, I guess, is what I'm trying to say. So that's what we've been focused upon. And, you know, she's had some stress at work lately, but there's just been a lot of things that, for some reason, this has come back with a vengeance. And now, as a result of it, she can't drive. So I've got one that just got cleared to drive, and the next, and now Michelle isn't able to drive, at least temporarily. So it's... Yes, we cover your prayers here, because it's been a kind of an interesting time here. But I feel like, you know, we'll get through it. We always do. But that's kind of what's been going on here. I think I have Vicki standing by. Vicki, are you there?
Yes, I am. Right here.
All right. Good morning to you. What's been happening in your neck of the woods?
Hopefully not a darn thing.
That's good. No
SOS,
news is good news.
You know?
Yeah, no news is good news on that front. Hey, by the way, I wanted to say, I got my Associated Press style book in the mail. Are you familiar with this publication?
No, I'm not.
Yeah, the Associated Press style book is considered to be the Bible of the journalistic profession. And I put the word journalist in quotes, of course, because we know they're not really journalists. There's some that are journalists, to be fair. There's some that look at it and try to actually tell the truth. Of course, they're stifled by the editors and newsroom gurus that trump everything they do. But we do have some interesting... This is actually what these journalistic profession considers what's proper to say and what is not proper to say. And it's put out by the Associated Press, but it's actually... It's the go-to guide for all journalists, regardless of network affiliation, and all of them have a copy of this thing. So the 2017.
So it says, don't call a politician a crook, even if he is.
You know, I haven't found that in here.
Oh,
not yet. I'm still looking, but actually, I've got a. I did find a few interesting things that I thought I might share with the group here. One of them was alt-right. I think that's a brand new term here. And it says, a political grouping or tendency mixing racism, white nationalism, and populism, a name currently embraced by some white supremacists and white nationalists to refer to themselves and their ideology, which emphasize preserving and protecting the white race in the United States. Now, you wouldn't know that from alt-right. You'd think it would be alternative and alternative media, alternative. But no, this is, they define it as a racial term.
That is interesting, because I did think that alt-right was the alternative media on the right.
But no, we're all a bunch of racists.
Conservative. Yeah. Not.
Well, if you're a conservative, you must be a racist. You must be one of them evil white supremacists.
If you reduce it down that way, it must be.
They say in AP stories discussing what the movement says about itself, the term alt-right, quotation marks, hyphen, and lowercase, may be in quotes or modified, as in self-described alt-right or so-called alt-right. Avoid using the term generically and without definition, however, because it is not well known. And the term may exist primarily as a public relations device to make its supporters' actual beliefs less clear and more acceptable to a broader audience. Depending on the specifics of the situation, such beliefs might be termed racist, white supremacist, or neo-Nazi. Be sure to describe the specifics, whatever alt-right is used in a story, include a definition, an offshoot of conservatism mixing racism, white nationalism, and populism, or more simply, a white nationalist movement. When writing on extreme groups, be precise and provide evidence to support the characterization, report their actions, associations, histories, and positions to reveal their actual beliefs and philosophy, as well as how others see them. And they have,
you know what? They must have gotten that definition from reading Southern Poverty Law Center.
I'll bet you're right. I'll bet you're exact. That's a good theory. I bet you're absolutely right on that. And they have some related definitions: racism, white nationalism, white separatism, white supremacy, neo-Nazism. So, instructions to the so-called journalists. This is where they're getting their information. This is considered the authority. The authority.
Yeah. You know what? It just goes to prove that you can no longer read the English language using the simple definitions of the words. There's always a doctrine or ideology or something behind it.
Yep, absolutely.
Because alternative right, I mean, what does that mean? It's just alternative, and they're on the right.
I want to know who came up with this alt-right thing in the first place. Wasn't it the media in the first place that said that?
I think it was, yes.
We've never defined ourselves.
It was a media term, I thought, to describe the alternative media.
Yeah, the alt-right. I object to that definition anyway, because I don't consider myself, other people might, but I don't consider myself right wing or left wing. to be perfectly honest with you, that's dialectical stuff.
Yeah, well, that's true. I do consider myself to be conservative.
Yeah,
I don't I don't like all the LGBT stuff. I don't like.
Well, funny you should mention that.
Yeah, I don't like all of that stuff. You know, I am a social conservative.
Because all of the cultural Marxism,
it
gender stuff has, well, get ready to be offended. The LGBT and LGBTQ, acceptable in all reference for lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender, or lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, or questioning, and or queer. In quotations, the formal names of organizations and events, other forms such as LGBTQIA, and other variations are also acceptable. Now, here's the thing. Okay, this is not broadcast friendly. Okay, when you're having to spit out an alphabet soup bunch of letters to describe something, this is not good. But anyway, they say other forms such as LGBTQIA and other variations are also acceptable with other letters explained. I generally stands for intersex, and A can stand for allies. Allies, now, Vicky. A person who is not LGBT, but who actively supports the LGBT community. Asexual, a person who doesn't experience sexual attraction, or both. The word queer can be considered a slur in many contexts, so limit the use of the word so to quotes and names of organizations following rules for obscenities, profanities, vulgarities as appropriate. Note that sex, gender, and sexual orientation are not synonymous. Then they have a separate section earlier in the book that talks generally about gender. Not synonymous with sex, gender refers to a person's social identity, while sex refers to biological characteristics. Not all people fall under one of two categories for sex or gender, according to leading medical organizations, so avoid references to both. Either or opposite sexes or genders as a way to encompass all people. When needed, for clarity, or in certain stories about scientific studies, alternatives include men and women, boys and girls, males and females. Language around gender is evolving. There you go. It's evolving. Why would it be evolving?
According to them. But you know what? If you were writing for a scientific journal, you'd know all that stuff. If you were writing... you know,
how would you know
doctors
it?
And psychologists studying that kind of stuff, but for the average newspaper, see, that's the thing. I don't care what a person's sexual preferences are.
Mm-hmm.
Keep it in your bedroom. I don't care.
Yeah, good point.
But you know, when they bring it out on the street and make an issue of it.
Well, see, the problem is, of course, why do they do this? Because the goal is not to have sexual freedom, because that's something they already have. I mean, other than having the government recognize your marriage, you know, if you want to marry a horse, okay, and you want the government to recognize that marriage to the horse, okay, then you might bring it out into the public. But nobody's hunting you down in your bedroom if you're, you know, nobody cares what you're doing in your bedroom. You already have sexual freedom. So where it becomes a problem is the goal is changing society.
Yes.
The goal is not, oh, we don't want you to force your morality on us. We have a problem with you forcing your morality. No, nobody's forcing our morality on you.
They're forcing their morality on us.
That's it. Right there. You got it. The goal is changing society. And when your goal is changing society, you have to bring it out into the public. Which is why I always go back and say, it's cultural Marxism. That's what the whole thing is about. It is about deconstructing society, creating the chaos that ensues, and then replacing that with their own, you know, I always use the metaphor of the ashes and the phoenix, but they want to destroy everything, break it down, and then upon those ashes, they want to bring up their phoenix of their new morality and their new society.
Yeah, well, from my point of view, they're trying to normalize deviance.
Well,
that's all.
Yeah.
I mean, that's all it is. I'm just trying to normalize deviance.
But what
and
happens?
I'm sorry that they were born with abnormal preferences, and it is abnormal. Sorry, people. But, you know, don't try to normalize it because it isn't.
Well, the thing that I come back to is, were they born with it? You know, that we could start there. Some of them might have been damaged at an early age.
Well, that's true. That's a question. That is a question.
I personally, and this is a theory, I can't prove it, but I personally think people are being damaged mentally. You know, we talked about this on the show some years ago, that the military was experimenting with chemicals to make people into homosexuals, to actually make them attractive, irresistible to each other is how they put it.
And yeah, as a weapon of war.
As a weapon of war, exactly. And I look around me today, and I see, okay, if this was a matter of rights, if this was a simple matter of libertarianism, or, I mean, I shouldn't use that term, because that's loaded with other connotations. But, I mean, if this was a matter of recognizing somebody's rights, then why would you be pushing it off? I mean, that's a pretty neutral position, isn't it? I mean, I recognize you. I don't think you should be discriminated against. That's a benevolent sounding environment. Okay,
yeah.
But if that was what it was about, then why in God's name do we see people pushing children, pushing them to question their identity? Why do we have this encouragement going on? Why do we have toy companies coming out with dolls for boys?
Mm-hmm.
Why do we have this encouragement to get them confused at an early age? To get them questioning who they are at an early age before their mind has even had a chance to develop? That's the issue here. That's what strongly indicates to me that this is not just merely about, oh, well, I want to recognize your rights. Anyway.
Yeah.
We already got a call on the line. Tell you what, if you want to call in, I'll give the number out. 844-646-8376. Toll free, 844-6-GOVERN. 844-646-8376. Hello, caller. Who do we have here?
Yeah, this is Ken from West Virginia.
Hi there.
I just sent you a link to an article from Spiegel in German magazine about this alt-right. Yeah, this alt-right, whatever it is, it's something, it's a construct. It's a construct to, it's been created to corral this group of people. And I first heard about it like all of a sudden, like, I follow a forum on the internet, and some guy writes on you, but I don't follow this Twitter sort of sphere, whatever it is, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But it emerged out of there, and all of a sudden, I was finding in this articles I was reading, fighting about this something. It's a created grouping of people, and it emerged out of Breitbart. And Breitbart's run from Israel, and it's got two leaders. There's a guy who worked for Breitbart who's a pervert, Milo Yiannopoulos, who's Jewish Greek guy from Britain. And then there's an American called Mike Chernovic, and he's the guy that did all the fake videos about Hillary was going to die, you know, and he made a name for himself on the internet. And all of a sudden, these two characters have been put out as the leaders. They're both Jewish, and they've been put out as the leaders of this quote unquote alt right movement. And it's a construct into which they can corral all these people, you know, to have and lead them in wherever they want to lead them. So that's the way I look at it. Yeah, it's just amazing how they develop these things. And
yeah, it's a form of name calling, modern day adult name calling, which is designed to discredit you.
Well, and the thing is that how many of the how many people actually know the definition as it was written there in that guidebook? I really doubt that most average people. I mean, I try to stay up on things as much as I possibly can, but I didn't know that's what it was.
Yeah,
I mean, and I could very well have referred to myself as alternative right media, because I write all the time.
What, it can mean anything. It can mean if you're on the right and you're alternative to what he is. If I'm different from you, then I'm alternate to you. You know, it's it's just a sort of an ambiguous sort of catch-all phrase to just like racist or anti-Semite or something. You know, I mean, it's just one of those derogatory phrases that they've developed, and then, but they also have these, they've created these leaders, while, you know, just all of a sudden, you know, and Chernovic and this Yiannopoulos are the two, and I sent you an article, it's very interesting, but yeah, it's amazing how they create these sort of social groupings or movements for, it's a grouping, and to...
But it's an artificial grouping. I don't know anybody.
Exactly.
I don't know anybody.
Exactly.
Who groups themselves as an alt-right. Now, maybe there are some, I don't know, but I think I'm pretty well informed, and I can't remember anybody that I know that says, hey, I'm alt-right.
Yeah, well, you know what, I think there are some websites out there like Stormfront that are like neo-Nazis, but I wonder if they just aren't leaders of the opposition. You know, because normal person that would want to tag themselves as a neo-Nazi.
Yeah,
I think it would seem to be cultural Marxism on the other side.
Yeah. Well, the problem with any group, too, is we have to be careful. There's always people, granted there's leadership of a group, but then there's also people who see certain things associated with the group, certain viewpoints that they with which they agree. And they will attach themselves passively to a group based upon what they've seen thus far. So to call everybody associated with a group or even having fellowship with a certain group, a part of that group, it becomes more difficult. I just think this is all about discrediting our side or normal people who are trying to get out legitimate, perfectly legitimate viewpoints. I mean, you take the white race for, just take this term white supremacist in the first place. I have a problem with that. Now, I'm sure that there are white people who are activists who genuinely want to be supreme. In other words, they want to rule over everybody else. I'm sure that those people exist. But I'll tell you, the vast majority of the people who are talking about white race in a favorable term are people like me who are concerned about it leading down the road to extinction. Because I think that that's what their goal, and they being, you know, those who direct things behind the scenes, I think the goal is to get rid of the white race. For whatever reason, they've decided they want to do that. And we can see evidences of it in society. Now, does that negate the fact that in the past we've had issues with, you know, slavery and stuff that have been unjust, and, you know, against other races, including the, you know, the blacks? I'm not in favor of that. I don't think white. I don't have a problem with all of us being equal. I think we should have equal rights. But that doesn't mean that it's okay to discriminate against one race over another. So in other words, just because you've had your turn at being discriminated against in the past doesn't mean it's my turn now. And that's where they're taking society, it seems. It's just gone the other way.
Yeah, it's like the world always has to have some group that has to be kicked.
Kicked to the curb.
Yeah. That doesn't make any sense. There is no progress in that.
Yeah, well, the progressives think there is, it seems. Yeah. But anyway, Kent, you have anything else?
Yeah, I'll send another link. There's something called the Kalergi plan. I don't know if you've heard of it. It's a Kudinov-Kalergi plan, and it's something I've become aware of, but it's actually, and there's actually an award, but it's some sort of obscure person of wealth in Europe. His mother was Japanese, and his father was Jewish, or something. I don't know. It's always all mixed up. And anyway, it's a defined plan to mongrelize the European race. And I sent you a link to that. And
okay, it's called, I'll have to check that out.
Kudinov-Kalergi plan, and it's really amazing, but it's being implemented.
So, I'll take a look at that.
Well, it seems to be working, doesn't it?
Yeah. It does.
Yeah.
Listen,
just like the protocols. So.
There you go.
All right, I'll talk to you later.
Hey, thanks a lot, Kent. Appreciate the call there, buddy. We'll talk later. All right, there he is, Kent in West Virginia, and you can call in as well if you want, 844-646-8376. We're almost up to the break already. They even have stuff in here, Vicki, about cisgender. You know, cisgender is their definition for basically what would be considered. It refers to gender and is not synonymous with heterosexual. These are people that are not transgender, I guess.
How do you spell cis?
A C-I-S.
C-I-S, okay.
Yeah, may be used if necessary to refer to people who are not transgender in stories about gender, as a means to distinguish people from one another. Use only with explanation. Do not use terms like normal to describe people who are not transgender. So there you go. I mean, it's all the cultural Marxism is incorporated into the media, and people wonder why society is changing opinions. It's because you're being fed the opinion to adopt.
My gosh, I broke the rule. I used the
shame
word
on you.
Normal.
No birthdays for you. Hey, bottom of the hour. We'll be back in a moment. This is Govern America. We're back. This is Govern America. Vicki Davis. I'm Darren Weeks. And the website is governamerica.com. That's the website for the broadcast, governamerica.com. And Vicki's website is thetechnocratictyranny.com. That's to make sure you get the in there, thetechnocratictyranny.com. And also channelingreality.com. And also she is a contributor to The Voice of Idaho. TVOINews.net. And you can go there and check out all the work that she does tirelessly working for you to get the message out, to educate, to inform. And that's what this is all about. So, anyway, before the break, we were talking about the Associated Press style book a little bit. The 2017, brand new, hot off the presses. And this is the instruction manual for the so-called journalistic profession. This is where they get their marching orders in terms of what's considered correct, what's considered right, what's considered to be acceptable language in this politically correct world that we're living. And there's one more term, and I'll get off of this, and maybe we'll refer to it from time to time as the need arises or as I find other outrageous things in here, which probably won't take very long. But there was global warming was another term. That I looked up, and they refer to what's correct. And here, the terms global warming and climate change can be used interchangeably. Climate change is more accurate, scientifically, to describe the various effects of greenhouse gases on the world because it includes extreme weather, storms, and changes in rainfall patterns, ocean acidification, and sea level. But global warming as a term is more common and understandable to the public. The world is warming, they say. They declare. Okay, this is what they declare. Now, they've issued their decree. The world is warming, mainly due to rising levels of carbon dioxide. That doesn't sound very neutral, by the way. I think we could dispute that, couldn't we?
Well, isn't that interesting? Because by defining it, they are basically sanctioning it, defining the...
And again, this is what journalists, where they're getting their information. This is what's considered correct. So it just naturally extends to the public that this is what you're going to see on your television screen or on your in your newspaper. And even a journalist who says, ah, that ain't right, I'm going to write it the right way, they submit their story to their editor, and that editor says, oh, well, we got to change this because the AP style book says it's got to be this way. And we don't want something incorrect going out to the public. They say most of the increases in temperature comes from man-made sources. Now, they declare that. These sources, which is total bullcrap, by the way. I mean, you got volcanoes spewing enough CO2 that it dwarfs anything man has ever done. I mean, and that's just one example of nature's sources of CO2. And this whole idea of CO2, we've talked a lot about this, and I don't want to spend a lot of time on it. But what about water vapor? Water vapor is the biggest greenhouse heat-trapping thing there is. I won't go down the bunny trail. It gets me frustrated when I read something like this. These sources include the burning of coal, oil and natural gas, deforestation, and livestock raising.
Livestock raising. Oh, yeah. Okay, yeah. There you go. They named the enemies. They named Bundys as the enemies because
there you
they
go.
Raise cattle.
Livestock raising. This is based on the vast majority of peer-reviewed studies. In other words, funded, grant-funded science. And I put the word science in quotes. So they say this is based on the vast majority of peer-reviewed studies, science organizations, and climate scientists. Sorry, skipping a paragraph here. In a joint publication in 2014, the U.S. National Academy of Sciences and the Royal Society of the United Kingdom stated, quote, human activities, especially the burning of fossil fuels, since the start of the Industrial Revolution, have increased atmospheric carbon dioxide concentration by about 40%. With more than half the increase occurring since 1970. Since 1900, the global average surface temperature has increased by about 0.8 degrees Celsius, 1.4 degrees Fahrenheit. This has been accompanied by warming of the ocean, a rise in sea level, a strong decline in Arctic sea ice, and many other associated climate effects. See, Bill Nye, or Al Gore could have written something like this.
Yeah. Micah, they are telling these people how to think.
Absolutely they are.
Who are then telling
the public how to think.
Yeah.
Because if they're saying it on TV, Vicky, they couldn't possibly be wrong. I mean, all these respected journalists, this whole respected profession, they couldn't possibly be wrong now, could they? I mean, they wouldn't be where they are if they were wrong. So surely they must have their facts straight. I mean, the New York Times. How respected has this storied newspaper been over the decades? Surely they got their facts straight. So, anyway, they say
that is amazing. How did you get on their list to get that?
No, I bought it. You can buy it. It's 20 bucks.
Oh, you bought it.
Yeah, I think
okay.
It's only 20 bucks. But much of this warming, you know, I remember back when I was first starting in the media business. I used to work in newsrooms back in the commercial when I worked in commercial television, and I remember we had news anchors there complaining about the Associated Press style book because they didn't like the definition or the not the definitions but the way that they were telling them that they had to pronounce certain things. They would change pronunciations to certain things, the pronunciations of words. They said, you know, things that used to be pronounced with an SH, they wanted it to be pronounced with just an S. Negotiations. Yeah. Negotiations was a word. I remember specifically the word negotiations.
It's driving me nuts.
Yeah, they would pronounce it negotiations because they were told that sounded cleaner. So that's the way you're supposed to pronounce it. So they didn't like it, but they adopted it. They followed along.
All part of destruction of the language, you know.
Yeah, it reminds me of Orwell's Memory Hole, and you know, actually, the Ministry of Truth. I remember, you know, in the book 1984, Winston Smith worked. He had a friend there that they would meet at the coffee house, and I don't know what the coffee house was called, but anyway, they met someplace in public, and they would talk, you know, and his friend was blabbing about working for the, because his friend worked at some kind of government, you know, thing where they were changing the language. They were actively changing the language. And there were words that were being removed from the vernacular, from the everyday vocabulary that people would use, and they were combining words. And the idea was to simplify the language, I think, is what they put forth in the book. That was the stated, you know, we're doing simplification of things, making it easier. Whatever, but what you're actually doing when you eliminate words from the English language or from any language, you are actually limiting the ability of people to express themselves.
Exactly.
A lot of words, so it is a form of censorship in a way. But since we think in words, we tend to. It also limits your thought patterns. It also limits
simplifies your thoughts.
Exactly. It makes you a simpleton. It turns you into somewhat of a simpleton.
Uh-huh. So, and we know from the plans for the education system that is precisely what they are doing.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So the finishing up this entry real quick, it says, to describe those who don't accept climate science or dispute that the world is warming from man-made forces, use climate change doubters or those who reject mainstream climate science, avoid. Now, this is something that actually surprised me. It says, avoid use of skeptics or deniers.
Skeptics is a big word. People might have to look that up in the dictionary.
Well, I hear them say deniers all the time.
Uh-huh.
That's an area they don't seem to be following this. Well,
that's a new
word. It is
a
brand new version of the style book. So it'll be interesting to see if they quit using the word denier. On the tube.
You know what? I use the dictionary online a lot. You know, mostly to look up the spelling. I know what word I want, but I have to look up the spelling a lot of times. And I've noticed that over the years, they have really, they've been cutting down the number of definitions that they have in the online dictionaries. I go to onelook.com, and it gives me, like, I don't know, 5 or 6 or 7 different dictionaries to look up words in.
Hmm.
And they really have been dumbing it down. The last word I looked up was rapprochement. I had to look that one up to make sure of the definition.
Mm-hmm.
In something that I was reading, but they really didn't give a good definition. I had to go to the Cambridge Advanced Learners to get a decent definition for it.
Yeah, and that's the important thing to keep in mind with these new dictionaries coming out all the time. Just even subtle changes in the meaning of words can completely modify whole outlooks, and that's what's interesting about it. We hear people talk about things like, you know, words that have fallen out of use, and they just disappear from the English language because people just don't use them. And so when somebody finally does go fall back and use one, what does that mean? And they go and have to go look it up. But
yeah, and sometimes you don't find it in the online dictionary. I have a 1907 Webster's dictionary, and it is one of my most prized possessions. I love that dictionary. It's about 5 inches thick, and when you go to that dictionary and you look up a word, you get everything about the word. you know, the different ways that it can be used and the source of it, you know, what language it originated from. I love that dictionary.
It's back from an era where they actually wanted to instill knowledge.
Yes.
Imagine that.
Yes, and they don't want to do that anymore.
Well,
they don't even want the young people to be able to think logically, despite all the propaganda about wanting to teach mathematics and science. They really don't. Because they don't teach the kids logic.
No. Well, I'll tell you what. We had a call on the line. Caller, if you want to call back, I was about to go to you, and then you dropped. So somebody from Massachusetts. You can call back if you want. 844-646-8376. Toll free, 844-6-GOVERN. That's 844-646-8376. In the meantime, we have now Dallas. Speaking of cultural Marxism, there's a big debate going on in Dallas now about removing Confederate monuments. And there's people that are fighting over that now. I just can't help but believe that we're going through a transition in our country away from what has been understood history, and we can get into the debate about how they've rewritten history, because we know the Civil War wasn't about history, it was about states' rights. But they've effectively rewritten it now to villainize those who were trying to break away. And I'm talking about the southern states. And now all of the people who fought bravely for what amounts to freedom for all, they've villainized them as a bunch of racist people. And it's sad to see our country falling to this. But when you
that's exactly what happened in China during the Cultural Revolution. That's mm-hmm. exactly what it is. It's a cultural revolution.
Yeah,
China got rid of so much of their history when they went through that Cultural Revolution.
Yep. Yeah, and then we're seeing that. So, and it goes back to, I'll tell you another thing that when we talk about the undoing of history, the elimination of certain words, the subject comes to my mind, the subject of book burning. You know.
Well, it is essentially the same thing. It's just, you know, when you take down a statue, it is, you're taking down everything associated with that.
Yeah. All the. Yeah, and the caller's back, so I'm going to go ahead and take the call. But I will say that with this, everything moving to these electronic publications, like Amazon's, Kindle, you know, I've seen they've actually deleted books from people. There were big controversies. People paid for content, and they've actually removed it because it becomes unacceptable later on. Societally. So I would be very careful about investing a lot of money in a library that's online that you don't control. Anyway, let's go to Massachusetts, I think this is. Hello, caller. Who do we have here? Hello, you're on the air.
I'm in Missouri.
Oh, you're in Missouri. I'm sorry. Oh, okay. I was thinking that was that other caller calling back. I apologize. Go ahead.
Okay, this is Ron. Two things. One, if you want to get the Old Facts Dictionary, contact Butch Paul Ministries. He is still selling them. They're like 50, 60 bucks, something like that.
Okay.
Like from 1821, somewhere in that era. So that's a good resource place for you. And another, I sent a story near a directory from the Black Lives Matter down here. They want to shut down our city jail because they don't have air conditioning.
Wow.
Oh. Wow.
I entitled the article, Let My People Go, called No AC.
Well, that's a novel idea. Just eliminate the concept of crime until you can have air conditioning. To keep prisoners
cool. Yeah, hopefully Derek can find it in his directory. I put it in there late last night, and I just thought it was a pretty bizarre article.
Yeah, let me see here. So it's because the...
But anyway, I'll let you all continue on, but I just wanted to mention the Bush Hall Dictionary for you.
All right, hold on. Before you leave, let's see. Let my people go in the AC. Is that
it? Yeah, that's it.
All right, we'll suck it in and see what's happening. All right, thanks, Ron.
Okay, bye-bye.
All right, bye-bye.
Thank you.
All right, there he is, Ron in Missouri. All right, we'll take a look at this here real quick, and then let's see.
That's pretty,
live in North St. Louis tonight with the latest on the protests. Darion.
Yeah, the protest has been going on out here for about 2 hours now at the St. Louis City Workhouse. Now, take a look right here behind me. Take a look at all the protests out here. There's dozens of people out here chanting, shut it down. They want St. Louis Workhouse Jail closed after reports of some inmates living in mold, no air conditioners, and rodents. Now, when protesters initially got here, correctional officers started to go towards them, but quickly turned around and let the protest commence. Now, it's not there anymore, but inmates actually wrote help on what appears to be a bed sheet and was hanging outside their windows as well, saying, let us out. Now, inmates have been yelling, let us out. What has been going on for the last 2 hours, actually. Pastor Doug Collins is one of the protesters out here. He's calling for city leaders to do something.
Where's Mayor Lida Cruiser now? I know she's just getting it off, but where are you at now? What are you doing about this situation? Where the governor at now? Have you walked through this place and seen how messed up it was? Where are you at now? What's your concern with this place? What are you going to do to help these guys and these young ladies out? What are you going to do? That's our main question. What are you going to do? If we don't get no answers from you in a day or two, Lida Cruiser will be down at your office.
Now I'm told there are more than 60 officers out here right now. Some protesters were trying to kick down a fence after some pulling and tugging. About five of them crawled under the fence and roamed around chanting. Now that's when officers moved in to try to get some order at this protest. Here's Major Hayden with North Patrol.
To prevent people from breaking this through in there. That's our plan, to keep this place secure. I understand people's concern about the condition on the inside. That's going to be checked out, but right now, we're not going to make the custodial facility insecure for issue of protest. I mean, we have to take one step at a time. So right now, what we need to do is make sure that we don't make this facility insecure.
Now, as you guys can see right here from the scene, back at the scene, police with SWAT gear have moved in. I hear somebody over an intercom system saying that this protest is now unlawful, and they're calling for everyone to leave here as soon as possible. Again, we're down here at St. Louis Workhouse Jail, where protest has been going on since about 7 o'clock, and now they're calling for everyone to leave this area. Of course, we'll bring you guys live back here with continuing coverage here at St. Louis City Workhouse in North City. Darion Henderson, Fox 2 News.
All because the prisoners don't have air conditioning. My question is, why do all these people come out, and why are they so concerned about people they don't even know, number one, but they'd rather have inmates turned loose? Very
bizarre. I don't know.
I just think this is another why
people do things like that. I mean,
what it looks to me like is any excuse to riot, protest, and to generally raise hell.
Well,
cause
I would
social
look at
chaos.
Who stands to profit from that? There's a builder out there somewhere that wants to build a new jail.
There you go. See, that's exactly what I told Ron. He was telling me, I think he mentioned this earlier in the week, that this was brewing under the surface. And I told him, a lot of times in the past, whenever they want an increase in funding for the prisons, they create a bad environment for the prisoners to the point where they start causing a riot or some other kind of disaster, so that it's the whole Hegelian dialectic thing, isn't it?
I mean, yes.
You create a big mess and you clamor for the solution, which in this case is more funding. It really, I mean, our whole society runs like this, Vicky. You just wrote an article about it a week or two ago. You know, budget time is terror time.
Yes.
I mean, it's the same thing, isn't it?
It's predictable as clockwork.
There you go. And the FBI sets up terrorist activities so that they can take them down to justify their budget.
Yeah,
it's sad. It's really sad.
The one I'll never forget, that one in Florida, a couple of retarded guys set up. Oops, I used a politically incorrect term.
Yeah, shame on you. Shame on you. We got bad news. Bad news. Red alert. Oh, man. Yeah, so, and we got a similar thing going on in, I wasn't going to talk about it at this point in time, but you know what? It makes perfect sense to plug this in, since we're already talking about this other thing, in Minnesota, as elsewhere with, you know, many police officers. The policy with the cops seems to be to shoot first and ask questions later. Well, that's the case that evidently happened again, only this time it was a white woman. It was an Australian woman.
New developments this morning with the Minneapolis Police Department speaking out for the first time about the killing of Justine Damond. She is the Australian woman who was shot dead by Officer Mohammed Noor. The officer was responding to the 911 call she made to report a possible sexual assault behind her home.
These were the actions and judgment of one individual.
Now, I believe this is the police chief, if I'm not mistaken.
I want to assure Justine's family, our community, and those in Australia that I will do everything in my power to make sure due process is followed and justice is served.
Reportedly, Justine Damond was shot because the officer was reacting to a loud bang he heard before Damond approached the driver's side of the police car.
Now, here's what happened. I guess from what I was been able to gather. This woman, white Australian woman, and I'm giving her race because it's relevant in this case, she calls 911 because she hears what sounds like, I guess, a rape in her backyard. The cops come. I think there were two cops in the car.
Yes.
And you're familiar with the story then. So she comes up and to the side of the police car for whatever reason. I guess she was going to direct them in the right path, I guess. I'm assuming. Anyway, for whatever reason, she approaches the cop car. They shoot her in the abdomen. And now there's this big controversy about it, as well there should be, really. Now, what's interesting, and the reason why I was giving her race, is because now there's been a big outcry. The police chief, who you just, I think, heard from in that report, has now been forced to resign. The mayor is now in the process of being pressured to resign as well. Tell you what, let's go ahead and take a break, and we'll be back in the second hour. Stay with us.
The crisis of our republic, waging war on the new world order. This is Govern America. Govern America.
We're just south of the Great Lakes capital city, covering all of North America via satellite, micro stations all across the country, and streaming live from FEMA Region 5 and Michigan Planning Region 2. This is the second hour of Govern America. Darren Weeks and Vicki Davis here, as we are every Saturday. And it continues to be the 22nd of July, 2017, as we get right back into it here in the second hour. By the way, greetings to all the folks listening to us on UCY.TV. Glad to have you along. All the people listening to us via satellite on the American Voice Radio Network. Glad to have you along. And the people listening to us on Liberty News Radio. Good to have you with us as well. And all the various micro stations. Appreciate all of the owners of the micro stations that are busy, diligently working to every single day to inform your community. Thank you for what you do. We appreciate you, and we appreciate your support of the country and for listening to and carrying Govern America. And we ask that you spread the word. Everyone out there, let people know that we're here. because we're trying to get the message out. Anyway, we've been sharing information here about this this situation over in Minneapolis. And I don't want to spend too long on this, but it's really relevant to the general discussion that we've kind of developed here with regard to the multicultural Marxist thing. You know, so we had this situation where this woman approached the police car. She was shot in the abdomen, and she ended up dying as a result of that gunshot wound. And the I'm still trying to figure out, because I guess Black Lives Matter is involved in this whole thing. Are you aware of that, Vicki?
Oops. A White House.
I'm sorry, I didn't have you on. Start over. I turned on the wrong pot.
A few years ago, there was a White House conference on combating terrorism and community policing, and Minnesota or Minneapolis was one of the city that they highlighted their programs for community policing, working with the Muslim community, bringing Muslims into the city structure, into the police department for community policing. So this story is a much bigger story than just about a cop who shot a woman.
Mm-hmm.
It brings into question the whole community policing program, bringing Muslims into it, and when they're not culturally or they're not culturally conditioned for it because of the nature of their religion. You know, the woman who was shot was apparently wearing her nightgown or pajamas or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And the guy who shot her, his name is Mohammed Noor.
Mm-hmm.
He was a passenger in the police car, and he just reached for his gun and reached over the driver and shot her through the window.
Which is just absolutely insane.
Yes,
because
it
could have injured the driver.
Mm-hmm. And since there was no real reason for it, because she's the one that called the police to report a crime, the natural thing would be to boil it down to he was culturally offended by her.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And those are some details that I hadn't caught.
I'll go back and find those programs on C-SPAN, because it was a 3-day forum, and they had everybody there. They had the Minneapolis chief of police. They had the a federal district attorney. They had the mayor. They had everybody there from Minneapolis to talk about this program that they had in Minneapolis.
Yeah. Now, and we have to keep in mind what happened in Baltimore. You know, Mayor Stephanie Rollins Blake and the protesters were allowed. In fact, this is actually what she said.
We also gave those who wished to destroy space to do that as well.
Yeah, because there's a reason they wanted the protesters to destroy. Hey, let them raise hell enough so that we can have enough of a mandate for the agenda. That's really what it boils down to. And, of course, we know Stephanie Rollins Blake was on Obama's community policing board to push that out into that city and other cities across the United States. Community policing, as I view it, is just it's a tool to involve everyone in the policing process for the purposes of basically ratting out everyone. You know, so if you see something that your neighbor isn't doing or should be doing or it is doing that shouldn't be doing, then you report them. And it's just the idea is that everyone's a cop now. And everything is a part of the Department of Homeland Security. Wouldn't you say that that's an accurate way of describing it?
Well, I think the idea is that people, especially immigrant communities, they're more likely to talk to a cop who looks like them to report crime than if they don't. And so, you know, they have to have, you know, a certain number of whatever the minority is as cops in the communities where they are. But I don't believe that that's necessarily true.
No. And
that,
what I look at it, just like in every communist country, you have people that are, you know, the citizens, for lack of a better word, are afraid to talk to each other. They're self-policing. Because to say the wrong thing or do the wrong thing or be known that you're doing something that is forbidden, then you're going to be reported.
Yeah. Well, you know what? I have to say, I will admit this honestly, that I really don't trust the police anymore.
Well, yeah. I mean, you'd be crazy.
I actually did have to call them for something that happened outside in front of my house, and I didn't go out, but I did call the police, but I didn't go out when they arrived.
Yeah. Well, you have to be careful. I try not to roll up on them in a car or something, and if I'm stopped, I try to be very careful about having my hands visible. And if I am reaching for something, I try to make sure that I give them warning on what I'm going to do, because you have to. Now, I will say this. I have had many encounters with many friendly and professional police officers. I say many. It sounds like, why, Weeks is always in trouble. But, I mean, over the years. I've had, you know, I just had a situation the other day. I think I mentioned the suicidal deer that I hit on US 127 with the van. I had a police officer there from, I think it was an Ingham County Sheriff Department deputy, and he sat there with me. Now, he did tell me, he says, I can't stay here for as long as the record gets here. He tried to get me somebody that would tow me to a shop, and I wanted to take it home. And because I wanted my own shop. And so, anyway, he says, well, I can't stay with you the whole time. He says, because I'm the only deputy on duty in the entire county. He says, I says, you're kidding me. And he says, no. He says, they've cut the budget that much. He says that normally it's me and another guy, and the other guy is sick tonight. He says, so... He says, in the state police, and I didn't know this, but the state police, he says, normally we have them, but they go home at midnight. So I wasn't aware that they didn't have a third shift at the state police either.
Wow, well, that's handy information, isn't it?
Maybe I shouldn't be putting it out. But that's the inside baseball that he gave me. But he was a very nice guy. I mean, you know, we talked just like, you know, you and I are talking here, and it was very interesting. But
I've never really had any problems with police. They've all been really decent, nice, friendly, you know, whatever. Not, if not friendly, then at least professional and decent.
It's the bad apples. The bad apples, and they're all throughout every, at least especially in any city of any size. I think that gives the whole lot of them a bad reputation. And but anyway, finishing up with this Minneapolis thing, they held a press conference. And what was interesting is Black Lives Matter is up at this press conference, and they're pressuring the mayor to resign. They start, she's announcing what she's going to do about the situation, and they start shouting her down. And you would think it's kind of interesting that they're actually defending a white woman now. Which makes me think that the whole thing, the whole purpose of it is not, it's really about, Well, let's just, I'll just play the clip real quick, and I'm not going to play much of it because it goes on for several minutes.
I am confident that Assistant Chief Arredondo is the right person to lead us through it. The experience of working closely with him over the past week, which has been so hard on everyone in Minneapolis, has solidified my confidence. Assistant Chief Arredondo joined the MPD in 1989 as a patrol officer in the 3rd Precinct. He has served as a school resource officer and a Northside beat officer. He has also internal affairs and property crime investigations experience. He has served as inspector for the 1st Precinct and a deputy chief and chief of staff.
We're asking for your prompt resignation.
Listen,
we don't want you as our mayor of Minneapolis anymore. We're asking that you take your staff with you.
Listen,
we don't want you to appoint anybody anymore.
Your leadership has been very ineffective, and if you don't remove yourself, we're going to put somebody in place to remove you. We do not want you as the mayor of Minneapolis ever again. We would like you to move out of our place. Your police department has terrorized us enough. Your press conference is ineffective because you won't let the people in, and you didn't want to hear us. So you hear me now. We do not want you as the mayor of Minneapolis.
Okay, so they were allowed to go on for several minutes, and nobody ever came and escorted them out. And I've seen people on Twitter asking the question, where the hell was security? Because normally you start getting up in a public meeting and start screaming like that, somebody's going to come and nudge you on the shoulder and say, hey, buddy, come on.
That's true. Even at the city council meetings here in Twin Falls, you know, when we've been there to testify about the refugee issue, there's been like, you know, 6 cops in the room,
yeah,
you know, for a room that holds about 50 people.
So I can only assume that this was a part of a plan. This is a part, I think it's a staged event. What do you think? Why would this guy be allowed? Either they have really bad security, or they, oh, hey, listen, all them cameras were there, and you had, this was all over the media. Why would this guy, why would these, this went on for several minutes, and to my knowledge, nobody ever got arrested.
Now, maybe, yeah, I don't know. I'd have to see the scene. I'd have to see how big is the room, how many cops, it would take some investigation to look at it, but you're right. I mean, they do these kinds of melodramas. I guess you could call them melodramas for political purpose.
And she's being pressured. She didn't look really, to me anyway, at all shaken by this situation. She just sat there, smiled, nodded. And let the guy go on. And at some point, she starts to say, I've heard you, and we can sit down and talk about it and all this other stuff. These people aren't interested in talking to anyone. I don't know. I'm suspicious. Maybe I'm just overthinking it. There's a caller on the line, though, from Florida. We'll see what they think. Hello, caller. Who do we have here?
Well, I might have one thing to say, Darren. Don't tase me, bro. Remember that one?
I do, yeah.
Yes.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Somebody stood up at an Al Gore rally in Gainesville, Florida, and they tased him, and they went flopping, flippity-floppity, flippity-floppity, and they dragged him out.
They sure did.
Say one word to Al Gore in a public meeting, remember?
That's right, I do, yeah. That's what usually happens if you get up in a public meeting and start spouting anything. I mean, if you go on too long at a city council meeting, they'll be escorting you out in cuffs. You got 3 minutes, buddy. You say what you want in 3 minutes. And if you can't say it, spit it out in 3 minutes, then that's too bad for you, because doggone it, this is a public meeting, and everyone has the right to have their say, as long as you fit within the boundaries that we tell you. So, anyway.
Yeah, they had 10 minutes. I mean, I testified several times, quite a few times, in St. Lucie County, Florida, against their nuclear power plants. They gave me 10 minutes. I was very respectful, but I'm sure if I would have gotten too emotional, I would have been escorted. But, you know, this lady in Minneapolis, I'm surprised they didn't give it a full Iraq treatment. You know, they have all the tanks, all the paramilitary gear that they need. They should have rolled up in their tanks with their cannons and stun guns and how about a microwave blood boiling machine? They got that at the town level there in Minneapolis, I'm sure.
Yeah, it probably would have cost.
They're armed with blood boiling machines.
Too much money. Not worth the trouble. Yeah.
I don't know. This is a riot.
I don't doubt.
Some unbelievable.
I don't doubt the incident is happened as a part of a perfectly normal, you know, tragedy, and it is a tragedy. What the guy's motives are, I don't know. I mean, if it was he was offended by her coming out in her nightgown, then that obviously indicates we got a big, big problem here.
Well, really, because cops see all kinds of things. You know?
And you've got to be able to deal with whatever you have and put your own personal ideology aside. But be that as it may, I mean, she's, I don't know. I lost my train of thought now. But anyway, go ahead, Harvey.
You have to give a lot of thought. You have to have a lot of thought before you call the police, that's for sure. I would think twice before I ever dialed 911. You know, I had an incident, must be about 12 years ago now, where a process server came to my property and tried to service a civil suit against somebody, and it wasn't me, and I tried to get him rid of him. And I said, you know, get the hell out of here. And he started saying to me, he says, well, who are you and what are you doing here? This isn't at my own home.
Yeah.
And I refused to answer him, and I tried to get him off my property. Well, at some point, when I got the little boisterous to him, I lifted up a can of soup and threatened to hit him in the head with it.
You're really in jeopardy.
It was a 14.5-ounce Wolfgang Puck organic soup. And he pulled his gun out. He was, you know, he wasn't an officer or anything like that. He pulled his gun out and said, freeze. And anyway, to make a long story short, about 15 minutes later, a half hour later, I was sitting at my home. I forced him to leave the property with my can of soup. And he finally, he had called the police, and the house was surrounded. About a half hour later, the whole house was surrounded with their guns drawn.
Wow.
So you have to think twice before you get involved with any type of authorities.
Well, at least you were throwing organic soup at them.
Right, nothing but the best.
That's right. Nothing but the best for the America's finest.
I didn't get to finish it right away. It took me quite a while because I had to be in jail for the next couple of days.
Yeah.
And I had to serve time with community service for attempted felonious assault with a can of soup. I kid you not. I couldn't make this one up.
Well, you know, if it was genetically modified soup, you could say it was assault with a deadly weapon. But I digress.
That's a good one. I never thought of that. That's terrific. Yeah, GMO soup.
There you go.
All right, have a great day. Thanks for your show.
Yeah, you too, Harvey. Thanks for the call. All right. 844-646-8376. Toll free, 844-6-GOVERN. So, anyway, I guess we've pretty much covered that event. Is there anything else you wanted to say about the Minneapolis thing or community-oriented policing services in general?
I have a report that was written by a police officer, police detective from Los Angeles, or maybe it was San Diego, about community policing, and he said it was communism. I'll get you the link for that.
That sounds
so you can Yeah, post it with the show notes.
That sounds good. Yeah, that to me makes a lot of sense. And I mean, I see the correlation there with communist countries. You know, in the neighborhood watch sounds very benevolent on the surface. Sounds very good. In high crime areas, they're looking for anything as a solution. And when neighbors come together, sometimes you have to come together to survive. And that really is what common unity or community is all about. That's what it's always been about, is survival. And grouping together and joining together and working together for a common cause. And I'm hitting all the buzzwords that the other side takes and uses and perverts for to take away individual rights. But that is what the goal is to use community and communitarianism type of situations to push an agenda of removing individualism and privacy and your ability to defend yourself and the whole lot of it.
Yeah. I've over the past couple of years, I keep receiving these invitations to go to neighborhood meet and greets, you know. And I know they really, really don't want me at their little get-together there.
You don't want to be social?
No. No, I don't want to be social.
Anyway.
I'm one of those that I just want to be left alone. Thank you very much.
Lone wolf.
Yeah.
You're one of those lone wolves.
Me.
Anyway, so now we have Sean Spicer having resigned from the White House. He's the White House spokeshole. Sean Spicer is gone now, or is anyway on his way out. And in this place, Trump is appointing a communications director, Anthony Scaramucci. I did a little digging on the Anthony Scaramucci and what his background was. And the Wikipedia says he's an American entrepreneur, financier, political figure, and author.
And his name ends in a vowel.
Yeah. Let's see. I guess he served on presidential transition team, executive committee. Under the heading of career is what I found interesting. After graduating from law school, Scaramucci began his career at Goldman Sachs, where he worked from 1989 to 1996, and held positions in its investment banking, equities, and private wealth management divisions. After being hired, fired, and rehired in a single year, well, that's quite an accomplishment. Scaramucci left Goldman in 1996 to launch Oscar Capital Management with his colleague Andrew Bozart. In 2001, Oscar Capital was sold to Neuberger Berman, and upon Neuberger Berman's sale to Lehman Brothers in 2003, Scaramucci served as a managing director in the term's investment management division. In 2005, Scaramucci founded SkyBridge Capital, a global alternative investment firm. Scaramucci was a chairman of the SkyBridge Alternatives SALT Conference, launched in 2009 and held in Las Vegas every spring. In May 2014, SkyBridge licensed the rights to Wall Street Week, a financial television news program formerly hosted by Louis Rukeyser on PBS, installing Scaramucci as host. Broadcast rights were transferred to Fox Broadcasting Company in 2016. Scaramucci did in 2011, the Ernst & Young Entrepreneur. We don't really care about his awards. At least I don't. Okay. On January 17th of this year, SkyBridge announced a majority stake sale to Ron Transatlantic, RON Transatlantic EG, and HNA Capital, holding a Chinese conglomerate with close ties to China's Communist Party. With the announcement, Scaramucci stepped down from his co-management role and ended his affiliation with SkyBridge and SALT. I just thought it was kind of interesting that you have, number one, a Goldman guy, former Goldman guy, big-time Wall Street banker, so much for drain the swamp, You know, we've got the swamp right here again, but he's got entanglements with his present company, with the Communist Chinese Party.
Yeah, that's really bad. I'll have to take a hard look at him. But the him being an quote entrepreneur, that raises my red flags right there because of the there's an entire fraud scheme involving entrepreneurs. It's really a con game.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of these small business enterprises that are startups, and I don't know if you got a chance to watch that panel discussion of the Helsinki Commission.
I watched some of it since this has been such an insane week for me, and that's one reason why I started the show off telling the story is because I was trying to give a little bit of a background as to some of the things that I've been dealing with. I did actually pull a couple of clips. I'll tell you what, let's take the break. Remember your thoughts here, and we'll continue on the other side. Stay with us, folks. This is Govern America. Vicki Davis is here. I'm Darren Weeks. We'll be back in just a moment. We're back. This is Govern America. By the way, the chat room is open at chat.governamerica.com. I was just reading some of the comments in there. Somebody had posted a link from the Committee on Open Debate on the Holocaust. Earlier, we were talking about Amazon banning books, you know, basically burning materials, just simply by doing a few keystrokes and wiping it out of your Kindle. And they posted a link there on the Committee for Open Debate on the Holocaust. And there's some of the Holocaust materials, evidently, Amazon's been busy deleting that. You know, I mean, here's the thing, folks. I mean, if we're not able to openly debate and discuss and read materials that we buy and keep them, then what's the point? We don't live in a free society if we have corporations dictating to us what we can and can't see. So even if you disagree with something, you don't have the right to censor it for other people. And but increasingly, that's what we have going on. YouTube, Google, Alphabet, whatever the company's called, I guess it's Alphabet, they're censoring videos with, you know, I mean, there's a number of things, number of accounts that have been suspended. I go through the accounts that I'm subscribed to on YouTube. I'm just floored at how many of them have disappeared.
Yeah, just gone with smoke. Pete Santilli's website, his YouTube account was gone. He had, I don't know, 70 million
subscribers.
I don't know if that's accurate or not. But Pete Santilli, of course, was the radio shock jock journalist who was arrested. And is on trial in Nevada for the Bundy Ranch situation.
Mm-hmm.
But they deleted his whole account, which is the evidence of what happened at Bundy Ranch. Now, fortunately, there are other channels that have the story, but they're beginning to try and censor Alex Jones. And they had David Knight did one of the best stories on Bundy Ranch on 2014. So really they're erasing the history that citizen journalists have accumulated on the crimes that are going on in our country.
Yeah. Some people have alleged, and I will say alleged, that Pete Santilli is an FBI informant. He has attempted to debunk that or counter that. I don't know who he is. I try to give people the benefit of a doubt, just like with Alex Jones. People talk about Alex Jones. I try to give people the benefit of a doubt because I don't know them personally. And so we'll just put that out there. But well, I know he is in prison right now.
Yeah. I met Pete Santilli when I was in Burns. And I don't know if... he actually pointed out to my friend Michael, a guy who was working for Breitbart, that actually had been an FBI informant. So I don't know if Pete would be, if Pete as an informant would point out another informant. Yeah, see, that kind of doesn't make sense.
Yeah, if he was an informant, you mean?
Well, no, the guy.
No, I know. I'm saying if Pete was an informant, he wouldn't be unmasking other informants.
That's my point.
Yes.
Yes, and the other guy that was working for Breitbart, writing for Breitbart, actually did admit that he worked with the FBI on some other case. Mm-hmm. And so he actually was an informant.
Yeah, so
Pete was right on that. He wasn't, you know.
Yeah, so I come back to, I don't know these people. Mm-hmm. And I don't, I try not to, unless I have some kind of concrete evidence, I try not to start making these allegations against people, other than to, this is something that has been, he's addressed it, and I don't know, I don't want to get myself in trouble here, because I've talked to at least one of the people who are making the allegations, and I have questions about them, so...
I know. The thing is that what that whole episode proved to me is that you just can't trust anybody.
Unless you know them.
Yeah, I knew for sure that Michael Emery and Becky Hudson and I were not FBI informants. Everybody else was suspect.
Yeah, so anyway, before the break, you were just getting ready to talk about the...
the Helsinki, small business.
Yeah, the Helsinki conference.
Yeah, what they were talking about was, and it goes to what you were just talking about. There was this guy Scaramucci and him being an entrepreneur. Well, the being an entrepreneur, there is a major thing going on in our economy. It's a global thing with entrepreneurs, and I only have really sketchy kinds of things. I did one story in Idaho about an alleged entrepreneur, and he basically was a college student just picked out of nowhere. Started a business, and all of a sudden he gets a Navy contract for $2 million. They use that Navy contract for $2 million to make the company go public. They get a lot of media hype. The company is worth millions and millions based on the stock market and media hype. They pre-sell product that they can't actually produce. And ultimately, the company ends up getting sold to the communist Chinese. And what that does, of course, is that it gives the communist Chinese a foothold in Pocatello, Idaho.
Yeah. Well, they're getting a toehold in everything. The real estate.
The whole thing about the small business and the entrepreneur, it is a major fraud scheme. And Goldman Sachs actually... I have an article on them where they were going to start, provide funding for 10,000 entrepreneurs.
Wow.
See, that's the whole thing about the global economy, the World Trade Organization. The participation in the World Trade Organization and the globalization of trade basically is destroying nation states, because it allows other countries to send in what are basically Trojan horses. Now, China does not have a capitalist system. They have state capitalism. The government actually owns a big percentage of all the businesses over there.
Yeah.
So really what you have in the United States with these foreign companies coming in is that you had American companies competing with countries, not companies, but countries. And they decimated our manufacturing sector.
Yeah, and it's not just the World Trade Organization. It's these bilateral or trilateral trade agreements that are outside of the WTO also. Like, for instance, NAFTA, I don't believe that's not a part of the WTO. That is an agreement that was instituted by the governments here in the West.
Right. It was a stepping stone.
It was outside of the WTO. I think when the WTO Uruguay round of talks stalled, they ended up picking up and continuing with these trilateral and multilateral trade agreements.
Well, no, I think the idea was the NAFTA. NAFTA occurred in, 93 is when they voted on it.
Mm-hmm.
I do believe that the idea was to create a common market for Canada, Mexico, and the United States.
Okay, so it wasn't a matter
in the
of
the same way that you have a regional governing structure,
mm-hmm.
the European Commission over all the countries of Europe.
Okay,
so it's a way to subvert national sovereignty to an unelected commission.
Yeah, and the problem with all of this is when you have, like, take the WTO, for instance, you're creating an environment where everyone who's a member of the WTO is a most favored nation. That's the status. So if you're in the club, you're in the group, you are a most favored nation. So they will not, you can't, so if you're not a most favored nation, if you're not in the group, then you can't sell your stuff anywhere, and you're not going to have much of an economy. Or if you do, if you're able to export something, you have something that's desirable enough that others who are in the club want it, you're going to end up having unfavorable terms, so you're not going to go very well. In other words, you're not going to do very well as a nation. The whole thing is designed, and I think this is really what you're saying as well, is that it's designed to make nationhood obsolete. It's designed to make nationhood undesirable and even, I want to say, impossible, not sustainable as an economy, because...
Yes. Well, obviously, your economy, the amount of money that your country is making, the products that they make, your country depends on the economy.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't have any money, you can't do anything. That's it. End of story.
Yep, that's it.
And if you can't control the finances of your country, you can't control the country. So, the World Trade Organization, it is a specialized agency of the United Nations. They don't like to put it that way. They put it that it is an affiliation, but it is a specialized agency of the United Nations. So any country can join it. But it creates a global trade authority,
I don't know if any
global governing system.
I don't know if any country can join it because Taiwan was in there. Weren't they kicked out to make room for China? It seems like, if I remember the history correctly, they had to be removed because China wanted to be in, and so...
Well, that's kind of a special case because the issue of nationhood is China claims that Taiwan is
not a nation.
Of them.
Yeah, exactly. But why recognize that as being legitimate? Taiwan was already in there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a political issue that I don't know. That adds a complexity that I really don't. I can't
speak to right now.
But
yeah. Well. I guess I have a problem. Okay, now if you come back to this Helsinki conference. I did do a couple of clips, but they were mostly on the Russian, the corruption going on in Russia.
Well, all of the corruption that they talked about is the same corruption that's going on here.
Yeah.
Okay, now perhaps I should explain, before you play that, maybe okay. I should explain what the Helsinki Commission is.
Okay.
Okay. After Nixon was forced to resign and Gerald Ford was named as the president, he signed an agreement between the Soviet Union, East Germany, West Germany, the United States, and Canada. I think maybe Japan was in on it too. But anyway, it was called the Helsinki Final Act.
Mm-hmm.
And what the agreement was to try and achieve greater cooperation on non-military issues between the East, represented by the Soviet Union, and the West, as represented mostly by the United States. And what they did is they came up with a basket of areas to cooperate in, and they included education and the environment and science and technology. Anyway, I can look up the baskets here in a minute while you're playing the clip. But that there is a commission that was established to oversee the degree of cooperation, you know, adhering to this agreement that the U.S. signed. And they're called the Helsinki Commission for short, but there's another name for it. Let me see, Discovering History. It called the Commission on Security and Cooperation in Europe.
Okay.
And it's an independent agency of the U.S. government.
All right.
Okay. So that's who the Helsinki Commission is. And that, by the way, is one of the most important agreements that almost nobody has ever heard of.
Yeah.
So.
Not surprising.
Mm-hmm.
So they had this discussion at the Helsinki Commission, and they were focused on Russian corruption. Now, the speaker here was Brian Whitmore, who was a senior correspondent of Radio Free Europe. So this is the person you're going to hear talk.
I can't say how delighted I am that this issue is finally getting attention. We've been talking for the last few years a lot about the information war. I've attended more STRATCOM summits and STRATCOM dialogues and STRATCOM seminars than, I'm enjoying all of them, but I think I've been harping on the issue that we need to broaden the aperture here a little bit, because information is just one of the things that the Kremlin has weaponized. And in my opinion, the most important thing they've weaponized is corruption. I'll start by saying I think it's a bit misleading to characterize Vladimir Putin's Russia as simply a kleptocracy, because this implies that the regime's primary aim is the enrichment of the elite. And I don't think this is the
case. I want to pause it right there. I thought it was kind of interesting how he says that that information has been weaponized. I just started the show off today talking to you about the Associated Press style book and what's correct and what's not correct. And none of this would be going on. Supposedly we have a freedom of the press today, and yet the press seems to have a knack for not talking about things that would be detrimental to the overall agenda of controlling people.
That's exactly right.
The whole purpose of the Freedom First Amendment was to be a watch for the press, to be a watchdog on government, corruption, and all of that. So I just had to point that out.
In Russia, corruption has been instrumentalized at home, and it's been weaponized abroad. The domestic role of corruption is to control the elite and to maintain its loyalty. Members of the Russian political elite effectively have the license to seek rents, to monetize their positions, so long as they remain politically loyal and politically useful to the Putin regime. Only those who prove disloyal or unuseful are ever prosecuted for corruption. When there's a corruption case in Russia, the first question I always ask myself is not, did he or she do what he or she is accused of doing? Because of course they did. I say, whom did they cross politically? What happened? Why are they on the outs politically? What happened here? That's always the first question to ask when a corruption case bubbles up.
Now, don't we do that here?
Yes, and that's exactly everything that they described in the way of corruption in Russia is what I've studied and found here. Okay, one of them goes on later and talks about Putin having been a mayor in St. Petersburg, and that seems to be where he got his start, mm-hmm. in building his fortune. Well, what I studied in Boise started with the mayor.
Uh-huh.
And what they do is they partner up with the local officials of the largest businesses in the area that then become they called it a mafia over there. I would call it a mafia. It's organized crime.
Yeah, let's hear what he has to say, because I think this is in this clip, some of what you're referring to.
Internationally, corruption has been weaponized and used as a tool of statecraft. The Kremlin seeks to capture elites and establish networks of influence abroad by ensnaring officials in corrupt deals. Moreover, the Russian state has both kleptocratic and ideological elements to it. This is what I call the two Russias. Sometimes kleptocratic Russia and ideological Russia do indeed work hand in glove. And by ideological Russia, I mean this project of Vladimir Putin's to essentially make Russia great again, to bring Russia back up off of its knees and to restore it to what it believes to be its rightful place as a world power. Sometimes corruption and ideology go hand in hand, but at other times the two Russias are in tension with each other and operate at cross purposes. Closely related to the weaponization of corruption is the weaponization of Russian organized crime, which is also used as a tool of statecraft. But just as it is incorrect to classify Russia as simply a kleptocracy, it's also incorrect to classify it as a mafia state, as many Kremlin watchers do. More accurately, as my friend and colleague Mark Galeotti wrote in a recent report for the European Council on Foreign Relations, Russia is effectively a state with a nationalized mafia. Russian security services cooperate closely with organized crime, often facilitating their activities. As a result, the security services are able to establish a so-called Chernaya Kasa, or black account, which has untraceable cash that can be used for all sorts of off-the-books operations and influence operations abroad. Organized crime groups are often pressed into service to perform tasks the Kremlin wants to keep its fingerprints off, such as smuggling weapons into the Donbass, assassinating troublesome dissidents in London, and so on and so forth. Weaponized corruption and organized crime are also part of a larger, non-kinetic arsenal that Putin's Kremlin is using to weaken Western institutions. Other elements of this include finance, information, energy, cyberspace, support for extremist political parties, and religion. If you want to think about the sources of Putin's conduct in this, why is this regime behaving this way, and you look at Putin the man, I like to look at Putin as kind of a hybrid product. Hybrid is another one of the words of the past few years. I'm going to put it into a whole new context. Putin's a hybrid man. It's very stereotypical to look at Putin as a project of the KGB. And I think this is correct, but it's only part of the picture. If genealogically Putin is a product of the Lubyanka, of the KGB, sociologically, he is a product of the wild 90s, of the Darwinian criminal world that existed in cities like St. Petersburg, where he was deputy mayor and played an integral role as a liaison between the city authorities and the city's main organized crime groups in the 1990s. And I think this is something that's very important to understand. In conclusion, I'll say that one of my favorite talking points is the headline of a piece I passed out to the other panelists here, and that is that is corruption is the new communism. The Kremlin's black cash is the new red menace, and it has to be looked at that way.
So there's what you're referring to with him being in St. Petersburg and having the people, the business leaders, and the ties to the mafia and all of this. And it's interesting getting something on somebody and using that as a weapon in statecraft. So you're right. Every single thing he's talking about here is exactly what they do here in the United States, and they do it, frankly, around the world. I what comes to mind is Dominique Strauss-Kahn, the former IMF director, when he was escorted off that airplane in cuffs, supposedly because he had raped a prostitute or something in a hotel room, assaulted.
Motel maid, or something.
I misspoke. Not a prostitute. A maid, yeah. Supposedly he sexually assaulted. And we know that they don't care anything about maids. They don't care anything about service workers. No. The first question we ask is, what did he really do?
Yes.
So yep, that's fascinating. Yep. Yeah, all right, let's take the break. We'll come back and dissect this a little more. Stay with us, folks. This is Govern America, Vicki Davis, Darren Weeks, and we'll be back in hour number three.
The crisis of our republic, waging war on the new world order. This is Govern America. Govern America.
Just south of the Great Lakes capital city, covering all of North America via satellite, micro FM stations all across the country, and streaming live from FEMA Region 5 and Michigan Planning Region 2. This is the third and final hour of Govern America. I'm Darren Weeks. Vicki Davis is here as well. And we're here every Saturday. We hope you'll spread the message here about the broadcast. Talking about the Helsinki Conference speech or committee hearing. I say committee hearing. It sounds like it's a congressional committee. It's not. It was something that was aired on C-SPAN, however. And they were talking about Russian corruption. But what they were really talking about is corruption in general. Because everything, as Vicki said, everything that they were talking about that Russia is doing, it's the old adage when you got the finger pointing somewhere else, there's three fingers pointing right back at you. And that seems to be the case here as well as around the world. We were just hearing before the break from Brian Whitmore, who was a senior correspondent of Radio Free Europe, and he's talking about Putin being tied to mafia members and using city leaders, how the Kremlin is using basically anything you can get on somebody to use against them in order to control what they do if they get into a position of authority. And honestly, Vicki, I really think that that's what the purpose of this whole national security apparatus is all about. Everything that we heard about from Edward Snowden, the Snowden revelations, the NSA spying and snooping on all of the smart devices, the telephone lines, text messaging, how they want to break and incorporate encryption into back doors. The whole idea being scoop up every single thing they can on every single person in the population so that they have something on everyone. So if anyone ever becomes a problem, that is a way of controlling them.
Right. Because and they will be able to do it. And It's the, you could just erase Russia out of everything that they said and put the United States in its place, and they would be describing what's going on here.
Mm-hmm.
And in my studies, I'll just, it's complex how it gets there, you know, and if I were to explain it to you, I'd lose you all. But basically what I believe it comes down to is weaponized infrastructure. And
interesting.
Infrastructure as a means to control basically a city. Now, if you think about what it would mean if a crime syndicate got a hold of your water system and had, you know, was able to design the piping system, what problems could they cause for you?
Mm-hmm.
It's that's what I believe at the bottom, at the very bottom of everything, I believe it's weaponized infrastructure is the control mechanism.
Yeah, and we got this thing going on with the ridiculous controlled media talking about this, you know, meetings with Trump. And, you know, of course, last week the big controversy was this Natalia, whatever her last name is. It's difficult to pronounce. But they made this big stink over this Natalia Veselnitskaya or whatever her name is, who claimed to have damaging information on Hillary Clinton. She met with one of the Trump sons, Trump Jr. But the whole thing smelled to high heavens, and we didn't talk about last week because we didn't get to it, but she had met with Trump Jr. under false pretenses. You know, he can't be blamed for wanting to meet with someone who claimed to have information that would be damning to Hillary, help his father win the election. Then it turned out to be a bait and switch. But I do think there is evidence that the whole Russian narrative was planned for a long time with this woman. Well, maybe not with this woman, but with, I think they, it was obviously, to me, it was obvious it was a setup situation. Then we had the G20, where Trump and Putin met for the first time. And it's kind of funny because one of the media outlets, I believe it was NBC, was asking Russian Foreign Minister Lavrov whether Trump could have possibly had other meetings with Putin. You know, because we're on this big witch hunt, and we gotta expose the collusion. The collusion's everywhere. And I thought Lavrov's response to this so-called journalist was pretty priceless.
We know of at least three meetings between President Trump and President Putin at the G20 summit. One of those meetings only revealed this week, and now Russia's foreign minister tells NBC News there may have been more meetings between the two men. Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov was in the room when President Trump met President Putin for 2 hours this month. The two leaders had also met briefly to shake hands and later spoke at an official dinner after President Putin was seated next to the First Lady. Now, asked if they interacted on other occasions at the G20, Mr. Lavrov is dismissive but does not deny the possibility.
We know about President Putin and President Trump meeting three times at the G20. They met obviously for the bilateral, they met at the dinner, and they met...
Well, maybe they went to a toilet together. That was a fourth time.
Maybe they went to the toilet together. I thought that was good. Good response.
Yeah. Well, you know what? I think all of the corruption in Russia is an export from the United States. Because after the... after the Berlin Wall came down and the reunification of Germany happened in 1990, Senator David Boren, who was a powerful senator at the time in 1990, he published an article in the Washington Post about how the United States needed to become a model nation. They wanted to move away from traditional statecraft, you know, and diplomacy, mm-hmm. and put an economic officer in every embassy. meaning that the United States' role in the world was going to become more focused on economic issues, foreign direct investment, and less on traditional statecraft and diplomacy.
Yeah, and foreign direct investment. You know, we talk a lot about foreigners investing, foreigners being brought in. And I have to say this, this is another frustrating thing to me, where we have a president who campaigned on putting America first, and yet we have things like this going on.
Well, the Trump administration announcing plans to increase the number of H-2B visas available for temporary foreign workers, a program that some say is vital to industries like landscaping, construction, even seafood. Casey Siegel's live for us in Dallas with some more details on this. Hi, Casey.
Heather, good to see you. 15,000 of these additional visas are now available. Applications being accepted right now. They are designed for migrant workers who want to come temporarily live in the United States and work one of these seasonal jobs, doing things like landscaping. That is the largest industry using the program. You talked about seafood fishermen. They're also folded in. Those out trolling the waters for lobster and shrimp. Then both commercial and residential construction utilize the H-2B visas, roofers, framers, carpenters, even the hospitality industry. The idea is for U.S. businesses to apply so they can legally employ immigrant labor, but they must first provide proof to the feds that they advertised the position and made efforts to hire American workers first, something one Texas CEO told me is getting harder and harder, saying he only receives one or two calls from U.S. citizens who answer his classified ads.
Okay, let me pause it right there for just a minute. Why? Why would he only get one or two, even if that's true? Okay, what are they advertising these positions for? What are they paying for these positions? That's the key here. Oh, right. We can't find any workers to come work for us. Well, maybe not paying minimum wage, you can't. See, this is the problem. I mean,
well, there used to be a video, a friend of mine who was with Programmers Guild, they had a video of a lawyer's meeting, and the topic that this lawyer was talking about to his fellow lawyers was how to not hire Americans. It's just up to your creativity, but it's so easy not to hire somebody.
Mm-hmm.
You can find anything wrong with them if what you really want to hire is a cheap imported foreign labor.
Yeah. So it's the government that has facilitated this. And Trump is playing along. You know, I've got a news article where the Immigration and Customs Enforcement are doing raids all over the country. You got Attorney General Jeff Sessions visiting some of the sanctuary cities and calling out the leadership of the sanctuary cities because they're working to protect foreigners who don't belong here. Okay, great. Fantastic. I support that. I applaud that. But then you have him, Trump, I mean, issuing or working to increase the number of temporary visas for these foreign workers to come here. Not good.
Critics, however, say they're just not buying it.
I would love to fill these jobs locally because we spend a tremendous amount of time with our people and our resources filling out the paperwork for this program. It's a very arduous process.
Many employers are claiming that they have labor shortages, but nationwide we don't see that evidence, which means to me that they might be able to find workers if they raise the wages that they offer.
There you go.
If they had to recruit nationwide.
President Trump has even reportedly relied on this particular visa program for seasonal workers at his Mar-a-Lago resort. So more applicants now coming in. It's a process that takes a little bit of time. That landscape CEO that we talked to yesterday say it's a little too late right now, Heather, because it takes so much time to get the process going. But they say they appreciate the efforts being made here.
You know, in that Helsinki panel discussion, one of the people on the panel put it, or maybe it was a trade panel. It was a trade panel I was listening to that was held at Georgetown. Anyway, he said that what they are doing, what other countries are doing, is actually exporting their unemployment. You can think about importing foreign workers to the United States, but what they're actually doing from their country's point of view is exporting their unemployment.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Which I thought was
causes unemployment here. That's a very good way of putting it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and what happened when they started doing that with IT people, which I was a contractor, you know, a IT person, computer systems analyst, programmer, when they started flooding our job market with H-1Bs from India. Now, India really was a third world country. But what happened was Bill Gates went over there and opened a training facility, and he started massively training people. So I considered it an act of war, actually, against our people. But what it did was that every American that was displaced from their career, you know, if you're 45 years old and you have a career and you're experienced, you probably also have a house and a car and a mortgage and loans and credit cards and all of that. When you put that person out of work, you destroy them financially, and what, you know, how is that beneficial for the country to put your own people out of work and to destroy your own tax base?
Well,
see, it doesn't
make any sense
no matter what they say. So, okay, so some corporation might save $30,000 a year on one person, but when you destroy the economic life of that one of the one American that was displaced, it costs infinitely more.
Oh yeah, yeah. Here we see, and of course, there's the trade negotiations are going on right now with China, and I think there's a lot more cozy relationships going on between Trump and China than. You know, I mean, he talked a big game about China being a currency manipulator and how unfair the rules are. We'll see what the outcome of it is after his administration is over, because I got a feeling nothing really as significant is going to change. If it changes at all, it's probably going to change for the worse. CNBC is reporting China wants to be a $150 billion world leader in artificial intelligence in less than 15 years. China laid out plans to become a world leader in AI by 2030. The government aims to make the AI industry worth $150 billion. They have a three-step program apparently outlining their aim to use AI, artificial intelligence, in a number of areas, from the military to smart cities. And we know that's key to the whole technocratic agenda.
Well, that goes to the whole weaponization of infrastructure that I was talking about. And in Russia, that Russian discussion, they were talking about the mayor, there being a core group of small businesses or whatever that are very influential, apparently that's how they've tracked the corruption in Russia. Well, that's the way it is here too. And what the small businesses are, they're IT people, but they are in different sectors like energy and water and telecommunications and wastewater. You know, the IT piece of your critical infrastructure that makes it a smart city.
Mm.
Does that make sense? Did I explain that right?
The IT infrastructure that makes it a smart city.
Right. Okay. So it would be the IT systems that would control that aspect of the critical infrastructure.
In other words, the software and databases and computer systems that
and the firmware that mm-hmm. when you it's called SCADA systems, SCADA, and those are the systems that are the interface between what is mechanical and what is software.
Yeah, the brains behind the operation.
Right, so that you can use. Like turning off somebody's electricity via the smart meter, or you can shut off a water valve, a water main or something from your office rather than sending a crew out to physically do it.
Yeah.
The SCADA systems are the systems that are the interface between software and the physical.
So we see also from CNBC, foreigners snap up record number of U.S. homes. Foreign buyers closed on $153 billion, with a B, worth of U.S. residential properties for 12 months ended in March. That marks a 49% jump from 2015 to 2016, according to the National Association of Realtors. Florida, Texas, and California drew the most international buyers. So our country's literally, quite literally, being sold right out from underneath us.
That's right, absolutely, and the whole tourism piece of it, they are driving up the price of places that you know where people used to go vacation. They can't go vacation anymore because the price has been driven up to a global price for. All of these global elite that have the money to turn countries into their playground, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So it's no longer a world for regular people to live. It's a world, you know, turned into a playground for the ultra wealthy, or as they call them in Russia, apparently, the criminal syndicate that has been legalized crime.
Yeah. Another interesting thing here, as we talk a lot about the military-industrial complex that Trump is doing, of course, he never promised that he was going to end the wars. He said he was going to knock the hell out of ISIS, but I don't, you know, he, anyway... I find it interesting who he's tapping to lead the army. RT says the Trump administration will nominate a former U.S. Army officer and lobbyist for the missile manufacturer Raytheon to be the next Army secretary. It will be his third attempted nomination for the post. The latest nominee to be the Army's top civilian is Mark Esper, a top lobbyist for Raytheon. He is a West Point graduate and a retired lieutenant colonel. His military career included a combat tour in Iraq during the 1991 Persian Gulf War. He was also a former aide to Senator Chuck Hagel and Bill Frist, according to the Washington Examiner. But he... they say, let's see, Pentagon officials privately express confidence that Esper, with his military, Pentagon, and Capitol Hill experience, will win quick Senate confirmation. No, I don't doubt that. He probably has them all on the take.
Well, the top military officials are just as corrupt as the private sector because, in the United States at least, the... our roads were built as defense roads.
He currently serves as Raytheon's vice president of government relations.
Mm-hmm.
So, Will he do anything to end the wars?
Not until everything is wired and the infrastructure is weaponized over there.
Well, yeah, everything has got to be in ashes and rebuilt.
That's right. It's the global Marshall Plan. We've got to rebuild everything.
There you go. That's the way they roll.
Mm-hmm.
So, anyway, and then of course we got this situation with North Korea. Now, this is all, you know, heating up big time. Of course, China was supposed to rein in North Korea. That was going to be the big thing where we were going to lean upon the Chinese to take care of that. And, of course, China, well, they say we can't really put pressure on Kim Jong-un, the, you know, the young'un over there from Pyongyang. Kim Jong-un, the young'un from Pyongyang. How's that?
Sorry.
It's okay. Anyway, we can't really put pressure on him when you guys are over in the United States. You're coming over there and you and South Korea are having your little war games off the coast. So this is the excuse, I guess, the Chinese are using to not rein Kim Jong-un in.
Washington has rejected a joint Russian-Chinese proposal aimed at de-escalating the situation on the Korean Peninsula. The plan called for North Korea to halt its missile testing and for the U.S. and South Korea to stop military drills in the region. During those exercises on Wednesday, American and South Korean forces fired missiles into the Sea of Japan, believed to be a warning shot towards Pyongyang. However, the U.S. State Department said the drills were not related to North Korea's development of weapons, and outside pressure would not change Washington's stance.
We do these kinds of exercises and have relationships like this all over the globe. If China and Russia decide to come out against that, that is not going to change our position.
This all follows North Korea's latest missile launch. On Wednesday, the United Nations Security Council held an emergency meeting on the issue, where the U.S. threatened force against Pyongyang.
North Korea's destabilizing escalation is a threat to all nations in the region and beyond.
That's new UN Ambassador Nikki Haley.
Their actions are quickly closing off the possibility of a diplomatic solution. The United States is prepared to use the full range of our capabilities to defend ourselves and our allies. One of our capabilities lies with our considerable military forces. We will use them if we must, but we prefer not to have to go in that direction.
The U.S. is sending the same message that they have been sending for 70 years, and that is to threaten again and again and again the people of the Democratic People's Republic of Korea. And the reality of U.S. endless threats on the people of Korea has ratcheted up. Now the sanctions, a new round of sanctions, a new round of threatening other countries that have any trade or economic relations with the DPRK.
So, looks like we're headed toward blowing up North Korea.
Well, North Korea won't let them in to install the global control and tracking systems. That's the whole problem.
And we come back again to the PNAC report. Project for a New American Century, long, you know, planned, published September 2000, full year before 9/11, by the, you know, the Lewis Libby, Jeb Bush, you know, all the usual suspects, Dick Cheney, Mr. Halliburton, all the people that were wanting to pull it off, and saying in the report that naming North Korea, among others, and saying that they needed a new 9/11. To be able to pull off their regime change in all these different countries. And then a year later, to the day, to the month, they got the new Pearl Harbor that they wanted. So, you know, you got to go back and, you know, for new listeners to point these things out. But now we have a situation where the United States government is telling the people to get out of North Korea, which I don't know why any American would want to go to North Korea in the first place. You know, I think you'd have
to. Are there really a lot of them over there? That would really surprise me.
Yeah. Tell you what, we got the break. We'll continue with North Korea for just a moment after the break and other things as well. Stay with us. Final half hour of Govern America straight ahead. Please don't go away. We're in the home stretch of the broadcast here, final half hour of Govern America. By the way, I wanted to say real quick before I forget, I will be on with Steve O'Brien tomorrow morning. For those that are listening live, now if you're listening to a replay, then this won't apply to you. It will have probably already happened. But tomorrow morning at 9 a.m. is the Republic of Texas radio show on RBN, Republic Broadcasting Network. That's tomorrow morning. I will be on half hour into the show with Steve O'Brien, if everything goes as planned. That would be 9:30 a.m. Eastern time. So his show begins at 9 a.m. Eastern. But I will be on starting in the second half hour of his show at 9:30 a.m. Eastern. So just to kind of for those that want to tune in to that. All right, we were talking about North Korea. Vicki, I don't know if you had anything else to say. I will say that Hawaii is now in the process of planning for an attack, a potential attack, you know, by North Korea.
I think any responsible local leader has to respond to pressure from the public to answer the question, what are you doing about this?
The state has an answer to that question about North Korea's nuclear missiles. It's a new emergency plan for the unlikely case of an attack on Hawaii.
The state says it would take a North Korean missile just 20 minutes to reach the islands. Everyone would need to shelter in place. Evacuations would come afterward, depending on the radiation.
Scary stuff, but officials say it's prudent to have a plan, just as we do for tsunamis and storms. Ben Gutierrez is here with new reaction tonight. Ben.
Yeah, unlike the steady tsunami siren, the siren for a missile attack would be a wavering one. People would need to shelter in place, preferably in concrete buildings. We'll all hear more specifics when the plan is rolled out later this summer.
Be afraid. Be very afraid.
I think we're going to start having duck and cover again. What do you think?
Oh, boy. Well, I already know how to do it. I learned how to do it, you know, in elementary school. So
that's when they were teaching that. And so, yeah, school children, the thought of them getting back under their desks and hiding from the nuclear holocaust.
I had a terrible thought when you were playing that story. I was thinking, is Hawaii actually still part of the United States? They have a judge over there that doesn't really seem to think so.
Well, I wonder if California is still a part of the United States.
Well, that's a good point, too. Yeah.
You know, so, I know they don't want to be, some of them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they just
except for the,
their own.
It seems like a lot of people living there now are starting to exodus to other states because the government that they have allowed to get out of control or encouraged to get out of control, depending upon their worldview, now it's gotten to the point where it's so oppressive that they can't stand or afford to live there anymore. So now it's leaving there to go to other states.
Well, you know what? They've allowed so many foreigners through the refugee, through H-1B, you know, through all the visa programs, not just H-1B, but H-2B. There are about 70 different types of visas. Basically, when they signed on to the WTO, and the rules of the WTO are free trade in goods and services. Well, a service is a person or a job. Mm-hmm. And so by signing on to the WTO with free movement under commerce of people, plus the United States has programs to sell citizenship, I think they have so flooded our country with new foreigners that we really don't have the American culture, American traditions anymore. And so when people, I know that Indians actually do have a major lobby in Washington, D.C., and they lobby for policies that benefit India, not the United States.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of like the American-Israeli Political Action Committee. Same thing.
Yeah.
I mean,
same
I don't
thing.
Think we should have foreign lobbyists.
And same with the Turkish people, you know, the Turk that has Shobani here in Twin Falls. They fund and lobby politicians that do things to benefit their home country. So basically, they just use the United States. I mean, we're just kind of here to be used and abused at this point.
Yeah, I think there should, at the very least, be a complete ban on all foreign lobbyists. And I wouldn't be heartbroken if completely all lobbyists were banned. Although, to be perfectly honest with you, none of this is going to happen as long as you've got the people in Congress making the decisions. They're on the receiving end of all the dough.
Well, you know what it is? They would have to take a long, hard look at our country's foreign policies, foreign and domestic policies, and decide that our historical political philosophy, a country of, by, and for the people who live here, is more important than money.
Well, that would require them actually being real patriots.
Yes.
And
what are the odds of that?
You got people like John McCain, who apparently was diagnosed with a brain tumor this week. And I don't have anything to say about that. I mean, I could get all tore up about John McCain. But you know what? I really don't care what happens to John McCain. Because he doesn't care what happens to our people, our children. So why should we feel sorry for John McCain having brain cancer? You know?
Yeah. I know what you mean.
But anyway, we got people like him and you know, Nancy Pelosi and all these people in Congress every single day. I mean, the problem with everything can stem from those 535 Congress critters, because Trump couldn't do anything, or whatever president. They have any bureaucracy, all of that stems from Congress. Congress allowed all of these. You know, we hear about the executive orders and everything and all the bureaucratic alphabet soup agencies. All of this stuff was authority given to the executive office by the Congress.
Right. And they could change it.
They could change it at any time. And it's just like all of the things they said they were going to defund. And yet there's funding in the budget for many of the same things that they said that they were going to change. And these are the Republicans.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Well, the members of Congress, I believe, are really just puppets. I think the real policies of the United States come from deeper within, maybe the deep state. But since the 1960s, well, actually, since after World War II, the policies of the United States have been global, not for the benefit of our country, mm-hmm. but simply using our country to build global power,
yeah.
you know, for, I don't know, the financial industry or whatever, but I have congressional testimony from 1967 where they're talking about what really basically is communism, redistribution of wealth from this country to other countries.
Mm-hmm.
And as the wealth is exported, the power elite manage to take their percentage cut from it.
Now, one thing that's interesting with all this technology and... you know, we have China now doing research on mice to create super soldiers with brain implants by exercising a certain type of, or stimulating would be the word, part of the mouse's brain that controls effortful behavior, as they put it in the Ars Technica article, which I'll put in the show notes. I'm not going to read it, but they say that they can stimulate one region of the brain, which caused the mice to be more aggressive, and they're looking at this as being able to use it on soldiers. And we were talking about that article earlier where they were talking about leading the charge in artificial intelligence. And here we have another aspect of the biological intelligence, literally mind control is really what it boils down to. And so you've got that going on. While at the same time, we talked about this social scoring system that the Chinese had. You remember they had a situation that the government initiated where the people in the country would be scoring each other socially. Well, yes. Now, Canada apparently is in the process of adopting a similar measure.
We know we're supposed to exercise.
Do you want to put this on the table,
please? Eat well. Good. And get enough sleep.
Earning points is simple, easy, and fun.
Now the Carrot Rewards app is ready to give you something for every healthy effort you make.
Completing a quiz.
Points that you can use for groceries, movies, even flights.
It seems like a good idea, rewarding people for their good behavior, I guess.
Yeah, sure, especially if you could turn into travel rewards and shopping, that sounds great. So if I'm going to make healthy choices already, why not then get more benefits out of it?
Too? Oh, sure. Let's dangle carrots. It's a great idea.
The app's founders partnered with government to create Carrot Rewards.
I love tracking my points to see how many I've collected.
Reducing disease burden and saving healthcare dollars.
We thought, why not harness the popularity of points? Why not use points as incentives to encourage Canadians to participate in healthier lifestyles, to answer quizzes, to find out when they can get their flu shot and where, to encourage them to go to the gym more often or buy healthy food and all those things.
This is how it works.
Let's say you pick a type of points that you enjoy collecting. After that point, the app will talk to you all the time and say, why don't you just read this healthy recipe? Or why don't you go to the gym a little more often right now? Or why don't you take a quiz about smoking or a quiz about a flu shot? And every time you do anything with this app, you'll earn more points.
By completing the flu shot quiz, I learned up-to-date information.
Information some won't see without encouragement.
For me,
the question for some who study disease risk is, will healthy behaviors actually result?
We know from other health apps that exist that it tends to be people that are already interested in their health one way or another. So these are people that are more likely to perhaps make behavior changes or already are making them to begin with.
And others still say your greatest reward has nothing to do with points.
Rewards is just, you should be, you know, working out and eating healthy. That should be your reward, not an incentive to work out even more.
The Carrot Rewards app will be available in the fall.
How do you like that?
And
that makes me want to go out and get a hot fudge sundae.
Yeah, exactly. Here's another final piece of this clip here.
And as we mentioned, that app is going to be available in the fall. Difficult to say whether or not it's actually going to change anybody's healthy habits.
Yeah. Okay, but isn't it funny how they talk about, they call it carrot. Like they're dangling a carrot in front of your face?
Well, they actually talked about the same thing here, but in reverse, penalty.
Yeah, the stick.
As a function of the price that you pay for health insurance, if you're overweight, you will pay more. And your employer will give you sanctions, punishments. And I mean, you know, that kind of behavior manipulation really, really makes me angry.
Well, isn't it funny how they just come right out and tell you they're taking the carrot and stick approach?
Yeah.
I mean,
people are
calling the app.
It's like Pavlov's dog.
Yes, exactly. It's exactly what it is.
Yeah. The first time I heard about that, I thought, how dare you? You know, where do you get off thinking that you can manipulate people like that?
And what's amazing about it is you get these morons on the street. Well, yeah, that sounds like a great idea.
No, I think they're paid morons.
No, I don't think so at all. I don't think they have to.
Well, yeah, you're right. There are a lot of idiots.
The problem is people, they're not deep thinkers at all. They don't stop and consider the consequences. So, oh, yeah, rewards. Okay, yeah, that sounds great. I like rewards.
Give me my biscuit.
Double plus good.
Yeah.
Oh, man. This is the mentality
that
we're doing.
What was that commercial? I want my bacon bits.
bacon. Yeah, the dog? Bacon strips.
Bacon strips, that's it. Yeah.
Bacon strips, there you go. Show title. Bacon strips. Very good. Jotted it down. All right. So, there was a speech recently in the waning moments of the broadcast here about global security cooperation. It was held at the Center for Strategic and International Studies. This is one of the ones that you sent over. The speaker was British Secretary of Defense Michael Falone. Now, for years, we in the Truth Movement have been called conspiracy nuts, crackpots for talking about world government being formed behind the scenes. Our forefathers fought a revolution to break from Britain, but you wouldn't know that by what this guy says.
Our critics have been wrong. They said we weren't committed to the 2%. They noted Parliament's refusal to endorse strikes against Assad's chemical weapons. They said we wouldn't be committing to 2 aircraft carriers. They said we wouldn't act in the face of trouble. So it's worth reminding ourselves just what happened next.
This is a Britain guy.
First, we did invest. Later that year, 2015, we conducted an ambitious strategic defense and security review, committing to continue to meet NATO's 2% target. Since then, not only have we done what we said we would do, but we've also chosen to grow our defense budget year on year by at least 0.5% ahead of inflation. NATO figures published last week confirmed that we are spending more than 2%, and we are also meeting the target to spend 20% of that on new equipment. We're using that growing budget to purchase, to develop, and to build a raft of high-end kit, from P-8 aircraft and drones to Apache helicopters and armored vehicles, from fifth-generation F-35 fighters to 2 aircraft carriers.
Go death!
The most powerful ships ever built in Britain.
Mm-hmm.
And we were delighted 2 weeks ago to witness HM Queen Elizabeth embark for the first time on her sea trials. Our carrier strike plans, thanks to your continuing support, and we have over 120 aircrew and pilots training here on 10 F-35 aircraft, those carrier strike plans are already becoming a reality. We're building, following a successful vote in Parliament, we are building a new generation of nuclear ballistic submarines to maintain our ultimate nuclear deterrent. And we are adapting to an age of information warfare, investing in equipment.
An age of information warfare.
With the sensors and receptors to handle a superabundant information warfare, transforming our military structures to cope with the virtual environment, bringing our signals and intelligence corps together under a shared command.
Shared command.
To analyze, to disseminate cyber information more efficiently and effectively.
Okay, that's what we... Let me play that last part again here so people can hear it again. Listen to what he says here about shared command.
Transforming our military structures to cope with the virtual environment. Bringing our signals and intelligence corps together under a shared command. To collate, to analyze, to disseminate cyber information more efficiently and effectively.
So what we're talking about, again, this guy is Michael Falone, and he is the British Secretary of Defense, talking about bringing our infrastructure into a shared command. Now, again, Didn't we fight a revolution to break from Britain? But yet,
yes, but that's what the deep state is doing, and I have John Brennan saying it. You know, connecting. They use terms like connecting up with our partners. You know, and they act like they are maintaining separate systems. But if you connect your system to somebody else's system, you have a single system. It is a single system.
Yeah, it is a new world order, isn't it?
Yes, yes.
And, isn't that exactly what we see coming into view, a new world order?
Absolutely. Yep, the new world order will be its IT systems controlling all of the countries of the world. They'll all be connected in. And that's why they have to take Korea out, North Korea out, because North Korea won't play this game.
Well, North Korea is the old world order.
Yes.
And we can't have old world communism because we have to have new world communism. Or right. Whatever
new,
you want to call
new
this thing.
High-tech communism.
High-tech communitarian technocracy.
It, you know, computer systems, by definition, are management systems. They are the ultimate in communist control.
Mm-hmm.
Because it enforces a standardization, uniformity, and control of everything within its sphere. So it's the ultimate communist tool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Can't argue there. So he goes on to talk about the progress in defeating Daesh. Of course, now, keep in mind, Daesh is a created enemy. Daesh was something that was, you know, now one thing that Trump is correct about when he said on the campaign trail, Obama created ISIS, same thing as Daesh. He said Obama, now his conclusion is the way they created it was wrong, incorrect. You know, then it was just because the way they pulled out, there was a vacuum created. We know from these declassified documents that ISIS was created as a CIA tool. And there was just information within the last week or two where it came out now that CNN, in fact, we have the story up on the website, CNN being embedded in some of the Syrian rebels, embedded with them. And these are supposedly, great rebel fighters and all this, freedom fighters, Free Syrian Army and all this stuff. And we know it's just nothing but a bunch of bullcrap. But anyway, before I talk us out of time, let me play this final clip again. British Secretary of Defense, Michael Fallon.
But the Counter-Daesh campaign is far from the United Kingdom's only operation. We've been going global. We're not just in the
global.
Middle East. We continue in Afghanistan. We're in Africa, too. In total, this afternoon, we have more than 10,000 British servicemen and women deployed or in bases and involved in some 25 operations around the globe.
It's about location, location, location.
So Britain has delivered, Britain is delivering, and we will continue to do so. But my third point is that we will do so in partnership. We are stronger, of course, when we work together. And the fact is today that our nations are facing a wave of multiple, concurrent, diverse global threats, from Islamist extremism, from North Korea testing missiles, and as we've seen, firing off missiles, from Russia, more aggressive, as we've seen in Ukraine and Syria, from Iran sponsoring terror, from the insidious spread of misinformation and cyber attacks. These are challenges that demand an international response.
Mm.
So as we deliver on our domestic vote to leave the political framework that is the European Union, we see Brexit as an opportunity not to step back from European defence, but to step up to strengthen Euro-Atlantic security. In particular, we are strengthening our bonds within NATO, the cornerstone of our defence, continuing to deter in the light of Russian aggression. We are leading NATO's enhanced forward presence in Estonia with 800 British troops. We are working alongside the United States' enhanced forward presence in Poland. This year, Britain leads the alliance's very high readiness joint task force. This year, I have dispatched RAF Typhoons to Romania for southern area policing to police the skies over the Black Sea. This month, Royal Navy ships take over for a year half of NATO's maritime missions in the Mediterranean, the Black Sea, and the Aegean. NATO must now transform itself into a far more agile organization. Secretary Mattis and I are working together for faster decision-making, better prioritization, and less bureaucracy in the way that NATO works. We also want to see NATO adopting a 360-degree approach, producing a coherent force capable of meaningful action with a modern integrated approach to defense and to deterrence. Last week, we took a significant step forward by expanding the UK-led Joint Expeditionary Force to include Sweden and Finland. That gives us a nine-nation armed force of like-minded Northern European countries able to deploy a force of up to 10,000 personnel. But the truth is that we are now more integrated at every level, working in each other's headquarters, flying in each other's planes, training on each other's ships, collaborating on everything from nuclear capabilities, including sharing a common missile compartment, and intelligence, to autonomy. And we have the prospect now of United States F-35 fighters flying from the decks of our aircraft carriers and our planes, in turn, flying from yours.
Get rid of that guy.
It'll be so much cheaper and so much more efficient to just have a one-world military.
Yeah, of course. Of course, you can't have a one-world order without a one-world military now, can you?
Well, no. So it's all in the name of efficiency and saving money that, you know, this is going to work out really, really well for the world.
Yeah. Amen. Onward. Anyway. All right, folks, we're out of time. Thanks, Vicky. It was by fast. Pray for this republic. Do what you can to restore it. God bless you, folks. And we'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.